You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
You're tuned into The Wire, 1 hour of current affairs and analysis starting now.
Starting now indeed. Laura, what's
Hello,
up?
Kelly.
Kia ora koutou, everybody. Thank you, Ali, for the morning report. Kia ora koutou, and welcome to The Wire for Friday, the 8th of September. Ko Kelly Enright Tukawingawa. I am joined in studio by my producer, Laura Quigsart, of course.
Hello.
Looking lovely today.
Oh, shucks.
So what have we got on the show today, Laura? We're talking immigration.
We are.
Everything immigration. Another very hot topic at the moment in the lead up to the election, which we are getting extremely close to. So obviously we are covering a different topic each week, and as we're covering immigration, we've got producer Connor talking to Francis Collins about the recent changes to the essential skills visas and why he believes the temporary migration is crucial to a flourishing New Zealand economy. Of course, we've got our weekly chat with National MP Jamie Lee Ross, but this time he's in the studio live. So it's big stuff, it's exciting, we've got a chair waiting. Following that, of course, we chat with Nicole Wedding from Radio Adelaide, so we don't forget what's happening across the ditch. And finally, producer Laura chats with Gael Idalmagoda, a trade union lawyer standing for the Wellington Central Electorate for the Migrants and Refugees Rights Campaign. Remember, if you've got anything you'd like to add throughout the show, give us a text on 5395 or YMI, call us on 309 3879.
Pre-wire.
Like, naked is the theme. Like, people just love getting naked.
First up on the show today, producer Connor Mercer spoke to Dr. Francis Collins from the Environmental Science Department at the University of Auckland. Dr. Collins is a leading researcher into migrant worker studies. We wanted to gauge his opinion regarding recent changes to migrant visas and how we measure value in migrant work and the quality of current election debate. He opened by asking, you have criticised the recent changes to the skilled migrant category and essential skills category visas as the introduction of a guest worker program. What do you see as the negative effects to our migrant workers and then in turn to resident workers?
Well, I guess the key effects in terms of people who are on work visas is that they become more dependent on their employers, because the only basis of them being in New Zealand is what's on their work visa, which ties them to a particular employer and in particular occupation. Those changes also mean that individuals won't have the opportunity to remain long term if they're on a job that doesn't get above the mid-skill threshold. So basically, you know, there's likely to be an increased incentive for some employers to keep workers in those income thresholds. And I say likely to be because we can judge from international evidence that in countries where there are income thresholds, you kind of get a part of the labour force that becomes increasingly focused on people on work visas because it's easier for employers not to invest in them and not to develop their capacities, I guess, and not to see them as part of a future labour force.
I wanted to gauge your opinion on the new bans that have been introduced. Mm. Judging the skill of immigrants work through economic measures, specific remuneration bans as introduced, is this an effective way to judge the skill and the contribution that these workers are providing to our society, or do we need to be looking at other measurements beyond economic factors?
I would say it's not an effective measure. You know, it's easy to sit here and say, oh, okay, you know, market's paying somebody more, so they must be more skilled. You know, at face value, that seems sensible. The problem is that in terms of the kinds of incentives it puts into the labour market and incentives it puts in particular, I think, for employers in terms of setting people up in particular kinds of positions. I actually, myself and a group of scholars actually made a submission on those reforms, and one of the big points we made was that these thresholds in principle are actually a really bad idea because they work to segment the labour market in ways that we don't want, not only for migrant workers, but also for New Zealanders who might or might not work in the same workplaces. The question you had at the beginning was, you know, the reduction in the threshold from the original proposal, is that a good thing? Well, I guess it's good in the sense that it's not going to capture about 6,000 or 7,000 people, but the principle is still there, and one wonders what's going to happen over the next few years if that policy remains in place in terms of the labour market, and in particular in terms of segregation within the labour market.
What you mentioned there, it's not the way we want to segment the labour market. Is there an alternative way that you'd rather see it divided up?
Well, I mean, my view is that any individual who is working in New Zealand should be given the same work rights. Even currently, prior to those reforms, someone on a work visa has their employer stamped on their work visa. That means in order to change employer, rather than just look for another job and get another job like you and I would, that individual then needs to apply to Immigration New Zealand. Immigration New Zealand's going to go and contact the existing employer and ask what's going on and seeing if this is okay. So it sets up a whole set of dependencies between the worker and employer that shouldn't be there. So one of the big things I would suggest, if you know, in terms of changes around immigration policies, I don't think our work visas should have employers stamped on them so that workers are stuck with those employers. And there are plenty of stories about people getting treated really badly exactly because they have much less choice in terms of moving workplaces. You know, so that for me is one of the big issues here. And I think the income thresholds can kind of add another layer on top of that, which makes things even more difficult for individuals who are on those, particularly in that lower income threshold.
A quick question regarding the new age conditionality they've added. So people that in that 30 to 39 year old bracket will receive more points. I was wondering, could you explain some of the thinking behind this and whether you think it's going to have a beneficial effect on our society and the way that immigrants are introduced into our society?
Yeah, so I mean, the thinking behind this is, you know, it's not just New Zealand's approach internationally, in particular in the settler societies like Australia, New Zealand and Canada. There's a kind of view that we want to try and identify who the ideal migrant is. And so the ideal migrant is of a particular age, of a particular health status, of a particular family size, proficient in English ordinarily, and of a particular occupation. And so those kinds of measures of age fit into that. I guess, you know, you can see some rationales for that, for people trying to plan, you know, who's arriving. But again, it's this kind of attempt to kind of mold a perfect individual, you know, from what in reality is the messiness of humanity. Is someone who's 39 necessarily going to make a bigger economic, and I would also argue hopefully social, contribution to New Zealand than someone who's 41? I think that kind of line in the sand can be a little bit problematic. And what we need to think about a little bit more is the social connectedness of migrants and the contribution people make outside of simply their occupation, outside of the amount of money they have in the bank account, in terms of contributing to community life and the places that they settle into. But we just don't have that discussion. And it's not a question of, your next question might be, what's the measures? Well, we don't have the measures because we don't have the discussion in the first place.
Parties that have an anti-immigration rhetoric, such as New Zealand First, or in part the Labour Party, do you think they're oversimplifying societal complications such as the housing crisis, unemployment, and they're trying to blame it on one specific cause and they're drawing too much of a link between immigration and the housing crisis or unemployment, for example?
Absolutely. And I'll tell you why. So there are two easy ways to account for why those individuals are wrong and those groups are wrong, and in particular the way in which the debate is completely off track. And one of those reasons is that we always talk about net migration. And so yes, net migration is at an unprecedented rate currently. So it's the highest we've seen in a long time. But the problem with talking about net migration is that doesn't tell us who you're talking about and whether those individuals who are arriving here, how long they're going to stay or what impact they might have on something like housing. So if you look at the current net migration rate, a lot of the increase over the last 5 years, which is when it's gone from zero to up to, 72,000, a lot of that is an increase in working holiday makers, a lot of it's an increase in international students, and a lot of it's an increase quite a substantial increase in New Zealanders returning from overseas. Now, yes, the New Zealanders returning from overseas will impact the housing market, but we don't want to do anything about that because that would be draconian in terms of immigration policy. For the other two groups, we know that they don't buy houses. And in fact, not only do they not buy houses, but they tend to move within very different rental spaces within cities as well. So working holiday makers don't even spend long in Auckland, even if they tick Auckland as their original destination. And international students, for better or worse, some are, you know, double, triple, quad bunking in rooms. And I'm not saying that's a good thing, but it does tell us that we should be very skeptical of anyone who's suggesting that that those numbers are driving up the housing market. The other side of this, of course, however, is the thinking about New Zealanders and the coming and going of New Zealanders. And I'm not, by raising that, I'm not suggesting we would ever consider, you know, regulating that in any way. But actually, that in a sense, part of the concerns around the housing market relate to people who have capital and can buy houses. And that does sometimes include individuals who are already New Zealand citizens who have earned money overseas or are remitting it back. And that's not necessarily a problem. It just suggests that we should be focusing elsewhere. We should be focusing on the housing market itself and, you know, whether there's too much speculation or whether there's, you know, if it's a question of supply, well, that might be the other side of that argument. Migration, I don't think, can easily be connected to those things.
Trust BFM. Sure can.
Kei te whakaronga koe ki te waia. That was Dr. Francis Collins. And next up, we'll have Jamie Lee Ross from the National Party joining us live in studio. Also, 5395 is the number to text if you have any thoughts on the topics I'll be talking to Jamie Lee about up next. I'd love to hear your thoughts.
Hey you, it's Wax Chattel's Asia Tour fundraiser at Whammy Bar September 16th. Gillian Anderson's favourite band are headed to Asia, and to celebrate, Wax Chattels have got together a killer lineup for one double whammy of a show. Wax Chattels with the Best, Sear, Sports, Double Double, Being, AC Freezy and PowerNap. Asia Tour fundraiser, Whammy Bar, September 16th. Tickets from Under the Radar.
Oh, wondrous day! The daffodils nod their merry heads to the joyous rhythms of prancing lambs' hooves. Spring is here!
What's so good about it?
Primavera's sweet and fragrant kiss, gracing us
with... Yeah, what's in it for me?
Take your spring clothes into Teddy's, make some cash.
Oh, glorious spring!
Fresh, dewy mornings! Oh, frumptious day!
Teddy's are having a spring clean. Bring your spring and summer clothes in now, and Teddy's will sort, price, and sell it for you. Teddy's Designer Recycle, 161 Ponsonby Road and 47 High Street.
Come on now, partner. Soothe an old man's soul with some of that good old down homey music.
Well, I ain't no Gene Autry, but... wake me up inside, now wake up, wake me up.
God's blood, son, cease! Damn it, Pappy, never stray from Border Radio, you know that.
Border Radio, with your alternating hosts, Bernie Griffin and Deputy Paul.
Now baby, please don't go back in New Orleans, you know I love you so.
She's a devil.
Border Radio, just authentic American country and blues. Sundays, 7 to 9 p.m., only on 95BFM.
It's time for our weekly political chat with the National Party's Jamie Lee Ross.
Indeed. Here he is, Jamie Lee. How's it going?
Kelly, great to be with you. Great. Finally in person.
In person. He's on the blue mic.
Thank you.
It's
you're
national.
On the, you're on the red button. You're not red though, are you?
No. Look, I can't tell you that.
Okay.
I'm keeping my judgment to myself.
Guessing.
Yeah, I'm neutral. I'm a journalist. I've got to be neutral.
Of course.
So tell me about life. How's the campaign been recently?
It's going pretty well.
Yeah.
There's not long to go. I think it's what 15 days or so. Yeah, it's getting intense though.
Yeah.
We look in my electorate of Botany. It feels pretty good. There's a lot of good support out there. But I think we're having a competition, and that's good for New Zealanders. They get to see policy. They get to see different ideas.
Yeah.
And for the Labour and National supporters, it's good to see it tightening up too, because it gets people motivated and out there and working hard.
Mm.
And I think for New Zealanders, it'll see more people voting as well.
Right.
When one party is well ahead of the other.
Feeling of the Comma Brunt poll last night?
There's a whole lot of polls out there. There's the TV3 poll and Roy Morgan and the newspapers will do them. We do internal polling as well.
Yeah.
It's fair to say Colmar Brunton is out of line with what both Labour and National internally are saying. We don't share it with each other, but of course we all chat and you hear about what's going on.
Right.
So it's a bit out of line with what you're seeing in those other polls.
Right.
However, it's going to tune people's minds into the fact that we've got a real competition here. There's the possibility of a change in government.
Mm.
So people need to sit down and assess the policies, work out what they want to see their country doing in the next 3 years, and work out who is presenting the policy options that work for them.
Cool.
So I think overall it's good for democracy.
Yeah, I agree. I think we'll see a pretty high turnout this year. Well, I'm hoping anyway.
You will.
We've got to hope. So obviously we're talking about immigration. For the listeners, can you explain some of the changes that National made earlier this year to the essential skills visa?
So pretty much what we have is, think of immigration like a tap. When your economy is not doing so well and you've got higher unemployment in the country and you don't have as many jobs being created, you turn that immigration tap off. We're in a position where our country is doing pretty well. We're in a position where our country is growing economically, and we're creating more and more jobs. Unemployment is going down. Countries tend to turn the immigration tap up a little bit when unemployment is low in the country, because you need more skills. What we've done recently is to simplify it, to put in place the remuneration thresholds, so it's easier for people to say whether they're getting a job in the particular threshold and what that can mean for them. We've previously had a regime which was skills-based and still is skills-based, but it was very technical around what particular skill and qualification you have. It's been simplified now. So I think it's easier for employers and potential employees to look at as well. The bottom line with immigration, though, is we've got net migration up about 70,000 at the moment. If you talk to our friends on the other side of the political fence, they'll probably say it's too much. But we're actually seeing tens of thousands of New Zealanders returning home now when previously they were going to Australia. When we became government, we were losing 40,000 New Zealanders to Australia a year.
Wow.
Net migration between Australia and New Zealand is now positive in our direction.
Yep.
Not at the thousands, but I think about 800 as the figure now, net migration, positive migration to New Zealand. That's a huge turnaround. That's New Zealanders voting with their feet. That's New Zealanders deciding they prefer to stay in New Zealand or come home from Australia, and that's a positive thing.
For the immigrants, the essential skills visa, for a lot of them that were here, that when those thresholds came into play, there was 41,000, I believe, that was... You're under 41,000. You have once those visas expire, they had to go back home. They've got 12 months stand down period before they can reapply. Is that correct?
Yep. Whenever you make changes to immigration, there's a bit of uncertainty for people.
Yep.
But changes are required, so your system's constantly adapting. And I guess that what you need to realise, or what we all need to realise with immigration, is just because you have a work visa doesn't mean you have the right to stay here permanently. We have a Kiwis first approach to immigration. We use immigration to fill gaps in our system, typically around skills. We don't train all the skills we need, and when our economy's growing and we're creating jobs, we don't have all the New Zealanders we want to fill all those gaps. So you use immigration and you use skills and you use remuneration thresholds to plug the gap, basically. If we didn't do that, which is what some of the other political parties want, is to slow down immigration, you would see a situation where employers were not able to expand or grow their business. There wouldn't be employees to fill those positions. You probably wouldn't change unemployment very much at all, because unemployment's about late fours at the moment, and it's trending towards low fours. That's pretty high, pretty high employment for a country. There are very few countries in the world in the OECD that have unemployment that low. So we just don't have the New Zealanders there to do the jobs.
So when you're saying, because you're obviously saying that you're more pro-immigration perhaps than some of those across the fence from you.
I'd like to say we're realistic about the economic circumstances we have.
Which, awesome. So do you think then that by having that 3-year gap, like that 3-year kind of, they have to leave again, and then having that 12-month stand-down period, that we're not letting these immigrants come in?
Right at the lower end.
Yeah, but I mean, in places like hospitality, seasonal fruit picking, you know, aged care, where that's probably very much needed. And now we're going to have these people come in for 3 years and then, you know, not be able to invest in the country, not have, you know, not feel really culturally welcomed here, and just going to have like a problem with longevity. Or
it's also being realistic with them. I mean, if you're at the real low end of the skill level, and you have an expectation of being here for a long period of time, the more you're here, the more you become a Kiwi, the more you have a belief that you should be able to stay. But if you're looking at it from a country's perspective, and you're going to have people that aren't just filling skills gaps but want to stay here long term, as a country, you want to say, we want to bring in the best, the highest quality, the highest skilled people that we can, because they're going to make the biggest economic contribution to New Zealand. And so, quite reasonably, the country, New Zealand, says the higher your skill level, the more you're earning, more likely it's going to be that you'll be able to stay. If you are at the lower end of the skill set and you are unable to go and upskill yourself whilst you're here, then we should be realistic with people that it's not likely they're going to be able to stay here.
So National has drawn a proxy from wage to skill.
Well, we've simplified it by doing it that way. I think you'd be misleading people by putting them in a position where they may have been picking fruit for 10 years, have their kids here and potentially starting school. You'd be misleading them into thinking they can be here longer term, and being honest with migrants is important. The thing I want to say about immigration is, I mean, if you go out there and talk on the streets to people about immigration, ask them what they believe, they think that we have too many migrants coming to the country. it's actually really hard to migrate to this country long term. If you want to come here and live here, you either have to be bringing skills at the higher end that we need, you have to be investing quite large amounts of money, and more funds coming into New Zealand is good, it boosts the economy, or you have to be in a position where you're marrying a New Zealander. And I don't think any government wants to honestly say you want to turn off skills, turn away investment, or say to New Zealanders they can't marry the person they love. The other main area of coming in is by way of students, and international education in New Zealand is worth about $4.5 billion to the country. 33,000 yep. people work in international education in New Zealand, and some of those transition and pathway through to residency as well. Those are the four main areas for coming into New Zealand. It's hard to stay, and as an elected MP, I have people every week coming to my office because they'd love to stay here, but they just can't because it's too hard. We do well as a country through migration.
We've got some criticisms, obviously, from other parties, as you can assume, that What?
Do we have an election or something?
We should get them all in here. So that by having this threshold, that obviously the people that have higher salaries can stay for longer, like you're saying, can apply for permanent residency, and that kind of creates an underclass of workers that could be vulnerable to exploitation because they have these very strict limitations that they have to stay within, and if their employer says, if you don't do this, if you don't do that, I'm going to cut this, I'm going to cut that, and you're going to be gone. Do you think that's an issue?
Well, if an employer is exploiting employees, whether they're migrants or not, they should be investigated by the Ministry of Building and Innovation through the old Department of Labour Inspectorate, which has been renamed and remodeled and everything. I think there's also a need for us to ensure that the immigration advisors that are giving advice are giving high quality advice, and where there's people being misled, they should be checked out and investigated and given a very good rap over the knuckles. You need to draw a line somewhere though, and you need to be honest with people, and you need to identify as a country what is important for you and what the goals are. The goals are to fill skills shortages and ensure that those that are here long term and end up becoming residents and citizens are the highest quality that you can have. If you just look at it from a theoretical perspective, what do you want as a country? Do you want to let in the best that we can find, or do you want to be extremely charitable and have a situation where you're spending more money supporting the migrants coming to the country than they're actually bringing in economic value? It's a harsh reality of immigration that you want to fill the skills shortages, you want to bring high quality migrants here, and you want them to be net contributors to the country. And I don't think there's many people out there, apart from in the refugee category, which is understandably and unashamedly the right thing for a country to do, to have refugees coming in. But other than that, you should be bringing in migrants and the net contributors. And so you have to draw a line somewhere.
Yep.
And you can't have everyone that wants to come here. If it was everyone that wanted to come here that could stay, then you'd be you'd have hundreds of thousands coming every year because we're such a beautiful country.
We are. So I've kind of gone through and drawn kind of the biggest contrasts between National and the other parties, and I just want to get your sort of take on those. So as you were saying before, that we need to draw in people that, you know, will attain, like, help us with the skills shortages that we've got. So Labour's saying they want to propose that each region draws up a skills shortage list, and then we draw on that accordingly. How do you respond to that?
And if you are migrating here and working outside of Auckland, you get extra points towards getting residency, if you like. We do try and attract and push people towards the regions, because we don't want everyone coming to Auckland and we don't want everyone staying here in Auckland. So I think we tripled the points that you can get if you move out to the regions. The recognised seasonal employer scheme has also been boosted, I think, from about 5,000 to about 10,500. Those are people that are picking the fruit, that are working on the farms, that are doing those jobs which it's a struggle to get New Zealanders to do. So they're typically in the regions as well. The using a point system, getting engaging with the regions and the economic development agencies within particular councils in the regions is the way in which you try and pinpoint where you need the migration to plug the gap. It's not a perfect science, though.
Do you think that Labour reducing to 20,000 is too much?
I don't think we actually know exactly what how far they're going to reduce it. They're saying tens of thousands to form government. They're probably going to need.
They said they want it. They want to reduce it by 20,000 a year to 30,000.
And then you're going to ask Winston what he wants to, and he wants to
exactly. He wants to be down to 10,000.
Yeah, look, you would just hurt the country. You'd have people here who would have to leave when they've you know, established themselves quite well already. You'd have employers that wouldn't be able to fill jobs. You'd have international education, which would decline rapidly. It's worth a lot of money to the country. You'd have people here who want to come to New Zealand and invest funds and build more businesses and help grow our economy. They wouldn't come as well. You'd be cutting off your nose to spite your face. It's popular to go out there in the streets and talk to the grumpy old men and women and say, we're going to slash immigration. It's not the right thing to do economically for the country, though.
ACT has said that they stand up for a system that is... you can come into our country if you want to be productive and peaceful and if you pay your taxes. So it's sort of that balanced view of we treat you as humanely, well, this is what ACT says, we treat you as humanely, but also we understand you're an economic liability by having you come into the country, you pay your taxes, that's how it works. Do you see that as a balanced view?
Well, ACT is one MP. It's easy to say whatever you want when you're one MP in the parliament versus, you know, National's 59 right now, Labour's 32.
Shout out to David.
Well, he works hard and he puts forward policy ideas, but he doesn't get a huge amount across the line, understandably, because he's one MP. Yes, migrants, if they are, you know, leaning on the educational health system, then they are probably costing us more as a country, but we also take a long-term view about the economic potential for a migrant coming to the country. That's where the skills criteria comes in. That's where the remuneration criteria comes in as well. You need to fill those skill gaps, though, otherwise you're hurting yourself as a country.
So finally, what is your response to Statistics New Zealand's claims that Nationals let in 60,000 migrants since 2001 and that was underestimated, that there were 60,000 immigrants that are here that people didn't know about as such because of what they wrote on their arrival cards, and it was kind of an age-old way of tracking immigrants, and you know, people are saying Michael Woodhouse should have looked into this because this is an old method.
Since 2001?
Since 2001.
60,000 since 2001.
According to Newsroom.
Do you know whether...
Well, according to Statistics New Zealand from Newsroom.
Yeah. Look, I don't have an answer to that. What I would say is, though, that there's always going to be a level of overstaying. You can't stop it. But you do your best to investigate it and move them on. And the Immigration New Zealand, they're hard-ass. They're pretty hard on people that they find to be overstaying. 60,000 sounds like a high number. However, spread over quite a number of years since 2001, I guess it's a relatively low year-on-year. I don't know whether those 60,000 are all staying or they're going or what. Bottom line is, we should have an inspectorate and a group there that investigates where there are problems, either through a migrant doing dodgy stuff or through an employer doing dodgy stuff or a migrant not being honest. My experience, having seen it, is that if you are in New Zealand and you have not been completely honest with Immigration New Zealand, it really closes that door on you. So they'll get found out eventually. They'll find their way through. The other thing we've done is we've increased the refugee category. It's been boosted up to 1,000 as well. And I think more and more will, over the years, we'll see the refugee category slowly increase, which is a positive thing. You can't just bring in any refugee you want, though, because if you don't have the support there for them, you're actually harming them.
I've got quite a couple of people texting in. Would you like to respond? I mean, we've got you live, so this is the whole point. Somebody said, dude, we haven't...
They got my gender right.
Dude, we haven't built the infrastructure to deal with all the immigrants, especially in Auckland. I'm in the building trade and did a four-year apprenticeship in the 80s, and I'm constantly fixing stuff-ups from cowboys from overseas. Flooding the country is short-term thinking. Paul.
Well, no, it's not. We need more and more migrants that have the skills in the construction sector to do the infrastructure building that we need. I mean, a big part of the migration flow in, for example, to Christchurch was people to help rebuild Christchurch. We had a big natural disaster then. We didn't have the people there to rebuild Christchurch. We've got property development, and we've got building rates in Auckland that are going through the roof. We need more people to be in construction there. In a perfect world, you would identify every single skill you needed in your country, and you'd train them for every single skill you need. You can't do that though, it's an imperfect science. You need to import labour to do that. I would argue that if you were to slash immigration by, you know, 20,000 or more, you would have employers within months screaming because they can't fill jobs. That you'd have people screaming because they couldn't grow their business, they couldn't help grow the economy, and you'd be hurting yourself. We should be pushing people out to the regions and not just basing everyone in Auckland, and we are. And I think there's a natural momentum there, people going out to the regions anyway, as Auckland property prices were growing and they weren't as high in other parts of New Zealand. People were moving to areas where they were able to afford housing more. Auckland's actually stalling now in terms of property prices, and you're seeing more and more the regions are growing in terms of property values, and there's a natural flow there as well.
Awesome. Well, hopefully that answered your question, Paul. Cool. Thank you so much.
Thanks, dude.
That was Jamie Lee Ross. Thank you so much for joining us live.
Good to be with you, Kelly.
That was the National Party's Jamie Lee Ross. The Wire.
That was indeed National MP Jamie Lee Ross speaking on immigration in New Zealand. And after the break, we've got Radio Adelaide's Nicole Wedding with all the latest in Australian news for Neighbourhood Watch. Stay tuned, and please keep texting me. It's very interesting.
Shaolin shadow boxing and the Wu-Tang sword style. If what you say is true, the Shaolin and the Wu-Tang could be dangerous. Do you think your Wu-Tang sword can defeat me?
On guard. I'll let you try my Wu-Tang style.
Bring the motherfucking ruckus! Bring the motherfucking ruckus! Bring the motherfucking ruckus! Bring the motherfucking ruckus!
Ghost face, catch the blast of a hype verse. My clock burst, leaving a hearse. I did worse, I come rough, tough like an elephant tusk. Your head rush, fly like Egyptian musk. Aw, shit, Wu-Tang Clan sparked the Wixen. However, I mastered a trick just like Nixon. Causing terror, quick damage, your whole era. Hard rocks is locked the fuck up, I found shot. PLO style, hazardous, cause I wrecked this dangerous. I blow spots like Waco, Texas.
I watch my back like I'm locked down. Hardcore hitting sound, watch me act bulk and tear down. A little bit tight asshole, songs going gold, no doubt. And you watch your corny make a foe. Yeah, they faking all that. Carrying gats, but your mind plan rolling like 40 max. Now you act convinced, I guess it makes sense. Wu-Tang, yo, so represent. I wait for one to act up, now I got him backed up. Gun to his neck now, react what? And that's one in the chamber. Wu-Tang banger, 36 styles of danger.
Bring the motherfucking ruckus. 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 Bring the motherfucking ruckus.
Like porno flick bitches. I roll with groups of ghetto bastards with biscuits. Check it, my method on the microphone's banging. Wu-Tang slang, I leave your headpiece hanging. Plus this, I'm kicking like Seagull out for justice. The roughness, yes, the rudeness. Ruckus, red rum, I verbally assault with the tongue. Murder one, my style shocks you not like a stun gun. I'm hectic, I wreck it with the quickness. Set it on the microphone, the competition get blown by this nasty ass nigga with my nigga. Than slave man boots, new recruits. I'm fucking up MC troops. I break glutes and trample shit while I stomp. A mud hole in that ass, cause I'm straight out the swamp. Creeping up on sight, now it's fright night. My Wu-Tang slang is mad fucking dangerous and more deadly than the stroke of an axe. Chopping through your back, psh, giving bystanders heart attacks. Niggas try to flake, tell me who wins them. I blow up this fucking prism, make it a vicious act of terrorism. You wanna bring it, so fuck it. Come on and bring the ruckus, then I provoke niggas to kick buckets. I'm wet and cream, I ain't wet and fame. Who's selling game? I'm giving out a deadly game. It's not the Russian, it's the Wu-Tang crushing. Roulette, slip up, you get fucked like Suzette. Bring the fucking ruckus.
Bring the motherfucking ruckus. Bring the motherfucking ruckus.
call that a news update? This is a news update. It's Neighbourhood Watch.
Kia ora, Nicole. How are you going?
I'm good, thanks. How are you, Kelly?
Good. So, what's up in Australia? What's going on?
There's a lot going on. This Indigenous activist just finished his walk, talks about a controversial lamb ad, and also the Grenfell Tower tragedy. That kind of cladding is surprisingly common in Australia.
So the as I was first reading that article, the Clinton Prior who walked, was it 5,000 kilometres? That is crazy. So that's Perth to Canberra.
Across the country. Ooh.
So can I ask why he wanted to walk 5,000 kilometres?
Yeah, so he wanted change on a range of Indigenous policy matters, including funding negotiations for a treaty with Indigenous Australia, getting rid of cashless debit cards for welfare recipients, and a royal commission into state police forces' treatment of Indigenous people.
So by walking that distance, what was he hoping to achieve once he got to the end, I suppose?
Yeah, he was hoping to meet with the Prime Minister and have a chat about these issues, and I think the meeting didn't go to plan at all. He was very disappointed with the reception that he received.
Because is it true that the Prime Minister Turnbull tried to reschedule the meeting or change it to a different location because of security issues?
Yeah, exactly. So there's this Aboriginal tent embassy that's set up in Canberra, and so they at first wanted to meet there, but the PM refused to meet there, and then they suggested the parliamentary forecourt, which the Prime Minister also refused, and in the end he insisted to meet on the private Prime Minister's forecourt, which, as you said, requires security checks for the visitors.
Wow. That is quite an awkward conversation, isn't it? An awkward interaction. Well, hopefully Clinton doesn't have to walk all the way back, because that's a exactly. long way. In other news, members of the Australian Indian community are angry about a new lamb ad, which has one of the Hindu gods eating meat. Is that correct?
Yes. It depicts the Hindu god Ganesha, who's widely considered a vegetarian, eating lamb in the ad.
There has been some issues recently, hasn't there, with ads going around on Australian TV?
There has been, yeah. I mean, Meat and Livestock Australia, they've kind of always produced these, like, controversial, like, offensive ads. But, right. yeah, like you said, like, there's been other people as well just, like, making ads lately. Like, there's been a lot of these kinds of stories. Interesting.
Yeah. So how has the Hindu community responded?
Yeah, so they... I mean, on social media, people are calling for the ad to be pulled and for them to apologise for the ad. And the Indian Society of Western Australia in particular has been really outspoken. They were saying that showing the god eating lamb is very insensitive to the community. Ganesha is in every Indian temple. They invoke the god at the start of every prayer, and they just feel that the ad is inappropriate. And, of course, the, marketing manager for the ad has said, it promoted inclusivity and unity. It featured gods from all religions, and they wanted it to be inclusive. And
right, of course,
all that stuff.
In terms of that ad last week, have we seen any progress towards getting, I suppose you have to be neutral, really, don't you? But is that ad still being played, or...?
I haven't seen it. I'm actually not sure. I think it's still allowed to be played. Mm. I know that the High Court just said that the postal survey is constitutional and it's going ahead.
Right.
So maybe that decision will have an impact. I'm not really sure, but yeah.
Because I heard quite a few people talking about it actually over here. So I think that news has travelled quite widely. So, obviously, finally, a Senate committee has recommended Australia ban the importation, sale and use of the type of cladding that was used in the London Grenfell Tower tragedy. But there is people opposing this.
Yeah, so I didn't know what cladding was at first. It's like this extra layer of skin outside a building, and I didn't know that this type of flammable cladding was surprisingly common here in Australia.
Right.
So, basically, a Senate committee... led by Labor, has recommended that Australia ban the import, sale and use, and the government are not supporting the recommendation. Interestingly, Fire Protection Association of Australia, who are involved in fireproofing buildings, are actually on the government side with this one. They're saying an outright ban on the cladding shouldn't be necessary because the current code already prohibits the use of that material in areas where it could be a hazard.
Right, okay.
So,
I think we saw something very similar over here, actually, straight after the tragedy where a lot of the importation of that cladding was banned. So
it was.
Do you think that it will go through? Do you think that they will win this argument, or has the government just said no?
I feel like they probably won't win the argument, and especially because it has been some time in terms of like the news cycle since the story, and I don't know how much public interest is still invested in this story.
Yeah.
Because if there was like a big public movement for it still, which I'm not really seeing, maybe it could get through, but I doubt it. I mean, there was a report on Four Corners about it, and they were saying, you know, thousands of buildings around Australia could be affected, but I don't know
Widely it might be felt.
Yeah, exactly.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Nicole, for joining us, and we will chat to you again next week, and hopefully there's no more bad ads that are coming out, because I think Australian TV's had enough.
We've had our share.
Yeah, awesome. See you later.
See ya.
That was Neighbourhood Watch. Ripper.
That was indeed Neighbourhood Watch, and you are tuned into The Wire on 95BFM. We've got texts flooding in. Immigration is obviously just the topic of the hour. One person has said more than 50% of imported unskilled labourers on Auckland inner city building sites. They don't know their rights and they can't leave easily because they're sponsored into New Zealand by their employer. Sounds like Dubai-style labour exploit. Interesting. If you agree with that or if you disagree with that, I'd love to know. Keep texting into 5395.
Get to grips with the intricate ballot ballet. Get your head around the persistent policy patter. Look towards possible political predicaments.
The Ballot Build-Up is your place for everything election 2017. Every day we're speaking to our listeners, to politicians and to thinkers at the forefront of the issues that matter. The environment, education, justice, the future of work and economy, health and livability. You'll have democracy sussed.
The Ballot Build-Up, weekdays on The Wire right up until the election, only on 95BFM.
Questions are all around us.
Why do you yawn when other people yawn?
Learn.
Why am I going bald?
Learn.
What is the Matrix?
Learn.
Is BFM still relevant?
Learn.
Where'd I put my keys?
Here.
Magnets? How do they work?
Learn.
Find out all the answers with Ready, Steady, Learn. Every Tuesday morning with a guest expert from the University of Auckland. Ready, Steady, Learn. 9:40 every Tuesday on 95BFM Breakfast.
In line with our discussion on immigration, I spoke with running candidate under the Migrant and Refugee Rights Campaign, Gayal Idemalgoda. Their desire is to increase the refugee quota full rights for migrant workers and oppose racist scapegoating. I asked him to explain the current state of immigration within New Zealand.
There's a tendency among parties, both the left and the right, to blame the social and economic problems that are caused by inequality, a system of inequality, on migrants. And it tends to be maybe a way of sort of like avoiding actually explaining the real reason for social and economic problems like the housing crisis or why wages are being driven down. The reason is because we live in a society that favors the wealthy and that privileges their interests above everyone else's. The housing crisis is caused by profiteering, not by migration. So I think it's wrong and cynical and racist to blame migrants and refugees for these social and economic problems. And many migrants are actually forced into positions of cheap labor. It's very wrong for former Prime Minister John Key to have said that migrants are preferred because they're harder working than New Zealanders. Actually, migrants are preferred by many employers because they're easier to exploit. And when you can exploit a class of the working population, you can actually drive down wages for everyone. So I think the way that all New Zealand workers need to address this issue is not to think about migration caps. That's not really the problem. We should be thinking about uplifting the rights of these marginalized workers who happen to be of migrant origin.
But that was quite a broad answer there. So I might just touch on a couple points. You said that housing was, the housing crisis was driven by profiteering. Could you go into a bit more explanation as to why you think that?
Yeah, well, there's no evidence whatsoever to show that migrants are generally buying up houses. I think the problem is that we live in a society that has neglected public housing and has encouraged the wealthy to buy up houses as a means of investment. So, you know, the public housing has been neglected by successive governments. And there used to be a time in New Zealand, of course, when having a house was considered to be a basic right, a basic entitlement of every worker. But we have had governments that are very ideologically committed to the idea that working class people should not expect housing as a basic right. The national government's solution to public housing has been to offer kickbacks to the wealthy, who, you know, and incentivizing them to buy rental properties, and not a reasonable way of securing people's rights to social housing. Recently, I understand the Environment Court has decided that one of the abandoned housing high-rises in Wellington, the Gordon Wilson flat, considered a nationally protected monument because it's one of the two examples of social housing blocks that the national government has built ever. So I think this is the problem when you neglect public housing and you don't prioritize it as a human need, but instead focus on its exploitability, then obviously profiteering will take hold.
You also mentioned the exploitation of migrants in the workforce. Do you have any, I'm sure you can't get into detail, but examples of that?
There are examples of that in every sector. I think you will find most studies that have been conducted, there's been a recent study conducted by ESRA, and they've found that the Filipino migrant community in the dairy sector is very exploited, and the unions have investigated the state of these Filipino workers and found that many of them are underpaid. There are many underpaid even the minimum wage. There are many who are not provided basic gear. Oftentimes their passports are confiscated. Oftentimes they're living with or at their employer or very close to their employer. They don't have the same freedom of mobility that New Zealand workers generally view as an entitlement. Yes, in every sector of the economy, especially in the horticultural, agricultural sector, you know, then in the IT sector, I've personally dealt with people who was underpaid $17,000 in wages, and he was working in quite a white-collar job, and in fact he wasn't being paid for many weeks and had no income. The problem is oftentimes workers, migrant workers don't feel able to reach out to the unions and the organizations that might help them because they're so tightly bound by their visa requirements to their employers. And if they do speak out and if they do lose their jobs, then they will automatically be disqualified from working in the country.
This year alone, we've had 100,000 migrants and refugees coming into the country. That's been a lot of concern from political leaders, from what we've seen. Do you have any commentary on that?
We take less refugees per capita than Australia, which is a country that has an appalling human rights record. We have restrictions on refugees, new refugees coming from the Middle East and Africa, which is, in my opinion, an inexplicable and racist policy, given that we are facing one of the greatest refugee crises in human history, unfolding in the Middle East. Migration isn't, there's no evidence, there's no information to show that migrants are causing pressures on infrastructure or on housing. There is, of course, natural population growth, which competent society should be able to deal with. But this is not because of migrants. Most migrants who come to New Zealand are, you know, poor. They don't invest in houses. They don't invest in cars and plug up motorways. So I think what's happening is there's a trend towards scapegoating, which is not helpful and actually obscures the real issues, which are issues to do with inequality, issues to do with privileging the interests of the wealthy, and issues to do with using migrants as a way of driving down people's conditions, which is not the migrants' fault, it's actually the fault of the employers who are empowered to do so by the current immigration and social structures that exist. What we can do and what we should do is actually uplift migrants so that employers can't use them in this way.
So going to different political policies around immigration, what is your opinion on the different ways parties are handling immigration?
Right. Well, I think the National Party's policies on immigration, National Party obviously promotes itself as quite pro-immigration, but I think it's pro-immigration for all the wrong reasons, because they want to be able to bring in hundreds of workers under such schemes as the RSC scheme as a source of cheap labour. And I think former Prime Minister John Key's comments about migrants being hard workers, which are, you know, very cynical, reveals his attitude towards this source of cheap labour. We don't think that migrants should be trapped in a system of cheap labour, and I think that's not something that migrants decide. No migrant comes here and decides how cheaply they get paid. So if you're a working person in New Zealand, you should have the same rights and dignity as anyone else. So we have some severe problems with national migration policy. Also, its policy of restricting new refugees from Africa and the Middle East, not including emergency quotas, but generally there's been a policy since the early 2000s of having no new migrants from Africa and the Middle East, which is, in our opinion, a racist policy. ACT has a similarly racist immigration policy. It favors the freer borders within the Anglosphere, and we feel that this is not this is blatantly racist, even though ACT quite firmly says that it is not. ACT has obviously a policy of favoring wealthy migrants, and I think it's a sort of soft racism, but sort of neglecting the interests of many Pacifica migrants, I think, is of quite concern. Moving on to Labour, well, we are very concerned that a Labour Party, a party of the workers, is calling for caps on migration. And I think one of the most inexplicable things about Labour's policy, or from what I've heard from Labour leaders, that many of them agree or will agree that migrants are not to blame for such things as the housing crisis, but they still call on caps. So I think that is scapegoating, if that's your emphasis. Also, they strangely ask for caps on student visas, and students are not the people who are in a position to buy houses or buy cars, so they're clearly not the ones who are, you know, there's no way you could reasonably attribute some of these social problems to the poorest of migrants. So I think Labour's immigration policy is quite sad as well, that parties are calling for this. New Zealand First immigration policy, well, I mean, we think that it is quite appalling, actually. New Zealand First has a long history of bashing migrants, and I guess nothing's really changed in that area.
Why should New Zealanders care so much about this?
Because your children will curse you if you don't.
The Wire. That was The Wire.
How serious is that music?
super serious.
Like we've done some amazing investigative stuff, which we have.
Have we?
All right. So, that was indeed The Wire for Friday, the 8th of September. Kia ora, rawa atu, and thank you to everybody who came on the show today. We had Dr. Francis Collins, we had Jamie Lee Ross, who joined us in studio, we had Nicole Wedding all the way from Radio Adelaide, and we had Gael and Almagoda. Also, a big thank you to my producers, Laura Quigstad, and of course, introducing Connor Mercer, who was the very first interview.
Hello,
thank you. How did you feel after that first Wire?
I felt relieved that it all came out when it was meant to come out.
That's right.
Yeah.
And how about sitting in with Jamie Lee? How was that?
Yeah, that was a fun moment. Well, I got to say, highlight of the day, thanks to the parking man who gave me an infringement notice of $0. So thanks for that. I really appreciate it.
It was a good day. It was a good day for everyone.
It is Officer 1171.
Thanks.
Shout out to you. We have so many people who have texted in today. So obviously, this is just a huge topic on everybody's mind. Everybody's got opinions on this. Somebody said to me, we do not need mass immigration. The only reason New Zealand is a better place to live and does not have many of the problems the rest of the world has is because of our low population. Then I've got on the other side, we've got people saying, imagine a world with none of these fabricated borders where a human born on this planet could choose to live wherever they wanted. Isn't that the only fair idea? Sure, there'd be overcrowding in some areas, but if that wasn't your thing, you'd be free to live somewhere else. They want utopia. So hey, each to their own. Awesome, thank you so much everybody for joining us today. Next week we'll be talking about health and Jamie Lee will be joining us again. So we'll see you then. Enjoy your weekend.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.